If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello, welcome to a new episode and new series of Germany in Focus, a podcast made possible by members of The Local. Today we're talking about Bavaria taking a stand against cannabis. They don't want anyone consuming it at Oktoberfest or beer gardens. Germany's new self-determination law, which will make it easier for people to change their gender, has just been passed in the Bundestag. We're going to talk about that, plus we'll touch on the planned rule changes for double surnames. We'll talk about a new report that urges the government to make abortion legal in Germany and hear from a German doctor from a pro-choice association. The German transport minister has been threatening weekend driving bans. We'll explain why. Finally, we'll get some tips for tourists visiting Berlin this spring and summer season. I'm Rachel Loxton, and I'm in Berlin today with the lovely journalist Paul Krantz and Imogen Goodman. Hello.
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 How are you both?
I'm good, thank you. I'm enjoying staying in a different part of the city at the moment, cat-sitting for a friend in Friedrichshain. So that's always nice. Berlin is such a big city that you forget that some districts exist. So it's just really nice to get out of bedding for a little bit and explore a different part of town.
That's nice. I'm jealous of you getting to do some cat sitting.
Yes, have a little holiday.
This last weekend I was in Nuremberg for the Volksfest, which was a lot of fun.
And
the weather was lovely. So it was good to be out there watching Bavarians drink a lot of beer.
Great.
Or Franconians, to be more precise.
Yes, don't mix those two up.
Okay, well, speaking of Bavaria or part of Bavaria, let's start off with what's been in the news. At the start of April, Germany partially legalized cannabis, allowing adults to cultivate and possess certain amounts. People are also allowed to consume cannabis in public, although not near schools. But the traditionally conservative-leaning state of Bavaria is not happy about this, and they now want to ban the consumption of cannabis at festivals like Oktoberfest, beer gardens, and even some parks. Imogen, what's Bavaria saying about all of this?
Yeah, well, as we've mentioned before on this podcast, it really is no secret that the Conservatives, so the CDU and the CSU, which are both Christian Conservative parties, have been vehemently opposed to the legalization of cannabis. And this really feels like the first genuine strike back at the federal government after they liberalized the laws back in April. And this really feels like the first genuine strike back at the federal government after they took this step to legalize cannabis. So the move to ban cannabis at folk festivals and in beer gardens was actually announced by the Bavarian state premier, Markus Söder, on X this week. And he really pitched it as a move to strengthen youth protection and underage children from the dangers of drugs, especially in places like folk festivals, which are meant to be family-friendly environments. So quite a few people pointed out on social media that there is some slight irony to this, because anyone who's been to Oktoberfest, or indeed I would assume the Nuremberg Folks Festival is a little bit similar, and witness these kind of drunken men staggering about, they might question how family-friendly these events really, really are. But clearly, this is something that's very important to the Bavarian government, and they say it is all about protecting children. So aside from beer gardens and folk festivals, the Bavarian Health Ministry has gone a little bit further than that, and they're also planning to roll out a blanket ban in beer gardens at pubs, so Gaststätte, and also in open public areas such as parks, which they say will also help prevent underage people coming into contact with cannabis. So if you're a resident in Munich, that actually includes the Englischer Garten, the Hofgarten, and the Finanzgarten. So these might all be areas that people might be considering lighting up, but that's actually going to become illegal very soon. After the new law comes in, local districts will also have the license to ban smoking or vaping cannabis products products in other kind of leisure areas. So places like swimming pools might be on that list if the local district decides.
Imogen, how are they actually able to do this? Because this is a nationwide law, right?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. But the interesting quirk of German politics is that while the federal government sets a lot of these laws, the states do have quite a lot of freedom in how they implement them. And some areas of society are devolved. So they are, the states are given quite a lot of freedom to do what they want or what they decide on a local or regional level. So healthcare is one of those issues that is partly devolved. And that means that the Bavarian Health Ministry has the ability to tighten up the regulations to the point that it might even, in the case of Munich, look like a sort of de facto ban in public if you're outlawing parks and these very social areas and events. Of course, as you might expect, not everyone's happy about the move. And one legal expert from the Bavarian Social Democrats, Horst Arnold, really described this tightening up of the law as cannabis hysteria. So he says they're massively overreacting, in other words, in his view. But it's not too surprising because Bavaria is a state that is known for its social conservatism. It's a very Catholic, very religious state. But what I would say is interesting is that this is the first real legal pushback that we're seeing against the law on this regional level. So we do need to watch this space and really see if other states that are more conservative leaning are going to follow Bavaria's lead and maybe introduce their own restrictions to make sure that the cannabis legalization isn't a free-for-all.
Really good to know. Thanks for that, Imogen. The German parliament has been pretty busy this week. On Friday, MPs were voting on a couple of laws concerned with how people identify themselves. The first is said to be a big step for LGBTQ plus rights in Germany. This is the new self-determination law, which will make it easier for people to change their gender officially. Paul, can you tell us about this law that was approved in the Bundestag?
Yeah, Rach. So this law is being called the Self-Determination Act. And basically, it's making the process easier for someone in Germany to change their gender entry at the registry office. So according to the Family Affairs Ministry, the act was drafted with three groups of people in mind. That's transgender, intersex, and non-binary people. But regardless of how one identifies, this law will really help anyone who wants to change their gender in Germany. And perhaps I should clarify, we're only talking about the gender registry here. So the law really has nothing to do with physical gender changes like hormone therapies or surgery. It will just make it easier to change one's gender in the books, so to speak, and their first name as well.
What was the issue with the previous rules that the government felt they had to change this?
Yeah, until now, official gender identity changes were governed under something called the Transsexual Act of 1980. So pretty old law there, maybe a bit outdated. And under that law, legal gender changes involved a long and difficult bureaucratic process. So people who wanted to change their gender had to obtain an expert medical opinion and a court order, for example, before they could apply at the registry. And this was time-consuming and also very costly in some cases. So under the new law, both of those requirements are scrapped. So as of November 1st, people who want to change their gender identity can simply submit a declaration to the registry office. They no longer need a medical certificate. There is a 3-month waiting period, so one has to notify the registry 3 months prior to the change taking effect. And a gender change is only allowed once per year at the most. Additionally, someone has to be 14 years old to apply. And until they are 18, they would need the consent of their legal guardian.
Has all of this been welcomed in Germany, Paul?
Yeah, it's certainly been welcomed, even celebrated by Germany's LGBTQ plus community. Sven Lehmann, who is the federal government commissioner for the acceptance of sexual and gender diversity, he's often referred to as Germany's queer commissioner for short, certainly welcomes the change. He has said that the current legal situation violates human dignity. Additionally, the German Psychotherapists Association has long been advocating for this change. And by the way, until 2011, German law required transgender people to be sterilized before being allowed to change their gender. And at least 10,000 people were sterilized before this requirement was struck down. And so many of them are still waiting for an official apology.
until 2011. That's not that long ago.
Yeah, exactly. This kind of archaic law was really on the books for a long time. Mm-hmm. So this new change to the legal system can be seen as kind of a long overdue and important step in the direction of trans rights and really just gender equality in Germany.
And is there anyone who's really against it?
Yeah, so there has been criticism from the far right and conservative actors that we'd probably expect. So the AfD or Alternative for Germany party, for example, reportedly they wanted to introduce greater hurdles against gender changes. So they really tried to run in the opposite direction on this. And the deputy chairwoman of the CDU/CSU parliamentary group, Andrea Lintels, tried to make this argument that the new law could somehow be used by criminals who want to evade the authorities. But critics of that argument point out that really no one is changing their gender for these reasons. And the Traffic Light Coalition overwhelmingly supports the new law.
Okay, really good to know. We also had a law approved by the Bundestag on the same day about double surnames in Germany. There are actually some complicated rules around when you're allowed to have two last names here. Paul, can you tell us what the new law allows?
This bill will allow both partners in a married couple to take on a double surname, with or without a hyphen, and for their children to take that name too. So for those who didn't know, currently married couples in Germany are not allowed to both take on a double-barreled name or a compound surname. So until now, partners getting married in Germany were basically required to pick one surname to take, or both partners could just keep their own names. And interestingly, the partner whose name would be given up was allowed to add theirs with a hyphen either before or after. So under the current law, it's like one person can have a compound name, but not both. But then under the new law, both partners can take the compound name and pass it on to their kids as well.
So a lot more freedom. Imogen looks very confused. The laws are so confusing, Imogen.
I would say unnecessarily so as well. I don't know
Absolutely.
If this is going to lead to the breakdown of society. Then we're just finally able to have double-barreled second names. But we'll see. Might be anarchy.
Interestingly, I did read that, of course, this still has to kind of pass through the Bundesrat as well. But it wouldn't be kind of taking into the law for like a year or something.
until the
paperwork together or something.
Another job for digitalization, hopefully. We'll see.
Yes. Really? So we will include links to the stories that we're talking about there so you can read more on these very complicated rules on surnames. Access to abortion and the laws around it in Germany have been the subject of heated debate for decades. This week, a commission set up by the coalition government urged that politicians legalize abortion by removing it from the criminal code. Imogen, what did the commission say exactly?
Well, it's probably worth mentioning to start with that this was a very extensive 600-page report. So it really was very detailed, very in-depth look at this issue from multiple perspectives. But the aspect of the report that has garnered the most attention in the press is the recommendation that the government decriminalise abortion entirely, at least in the early stages of pregnancy. The commissioners were quite careful not to mention a specific week, but they did argue that at the start of the pregnancy, the rights of the women should take precedence over the rights of the unborn fetus. So they said that it should be up to the legislator whether to allow abortion up to week 12 or week 22, and that there should be exceptions in certain cases, such as a medical emergency. But ultimately, the headline recommendation was to legalize abortion. Now, this may sound surprising to quite a few of our listeners, but abortion is still technically illegal in Germany, though there are some exceptions. So under the criminal code, abortion is technically criminalized, but an exception allows women to access abortions in the first 12 weeks of a pregnancy and after mandatory counselling. There are also, of course, carve-outs for situations like rape or pregnancies that would impact the health of the mother. But as I said, ultimately, it's not legal. So anti-abortion activists have often said that this situation is a good compromise and that it's kind of kept the social peace in Germany to have abortion criminalised, but to have exceptions and to have it not punishable under law. But the advisory commission, in their sort of investigations, pointed out that the current legal framework, this kind of strange grey zone, can be incredibly incredibly problematic for both women and medical professionals. So for doctors, for instance, they said there are often fears of reprisals if they carry out or advise women on abortions. And for women, the fact that they are technically breaking the law when seeking an abortion can add unnecessary mental strain at an already stressful time. So according to the commission, the current legal situation in Germany is untenable and actually incompatible with international law.
What is the public opinion in Germany on abortion laws? Do we have an idea about that?
As you can imagine, this is definitely an issue that some people feel very strongly about. But interestingly enough, the majority of people in Germany seem to take quite a moderate and perhaps you could argue common sense approach to the issue. A recent poll in TAS found that 80% of people disagree with abortion being criminalised in Germany. And around three quarters also believe it should be removed from the criminal code by the government. So something that may also come as a surprise is that support for decriminalising abortion spans across all the political parties, including the CDU and CSU, who are some of the most outspoken opponents of liberalising abortion laws. So interestingly, around 77.5% of CDU and CSU voters supported legalising abortion, while among supporters of more left-wing parties like Die Linke and the Greens, support is well over 90%. So this really goes to show how progressive public views on abortion have become over time, even in religious communities in Germany, and just how outdated the current law really seems to be compared to where the majority of the population seem to be on this issue. This is a case, perhaps, of the population being more progressive than the politicians.
Really interesting. And this debate really has been going on for years, hasn't it? It was this government, the Social Democrats, Greens and Free Democrats coalition, who back in 2022 got rid of a clause known as paragraph 219A in the law. This clause had meant that doctors in Germany were unable to advertise that they carry out abortions and detail what methods they use. And it even resulted in some prosecutions, which is quite surprising.
Absolutely. I think that's when it really does come into sharp relief that this is and has been for a long time a part of the criminal code. And I think, you know, there's a sort of strange limbo that Germany's been stuck in for so long on this. Again, advocates of keeping the law the way it is say that this compromise has actually kept the social peace. It's sort of a fudge that appeals to both sides of the issue. But a counter-argument to that would be that actually, you know, the fact that there have been prosecutions, the fact that women's groups have seen big issues with this law for a long time, really highlights the fact that not everyone has been happy. And now it really does seem that perhaps a step is being taken forward on this, but we'll see if that ends up changing anything in the near future.
Yeah, and it's kind of just wild to think about how, like, yeah, so this compromise maybe keeps the peace in the sense that effectively, abortion options are there, and therefore people aren't up in arms like fighting for their rights. But if we think about foreigners who have just freshly come to Germany and maybe they're in a position where they need to seek out an abortion and they're looking it up online and they come across information that is technically illegal, I mean, this could send your head spinning and now you're thinking, do I need to cross a border to a different state or something? And it's just really confusing.
Yeah.
So from that point of view, it seems like this law would just help make everything more clear.
And actually, it does happen in some cases that people in Germany will travel to other countries for abortion, for example, if it's just not as accessible in their area.
Absolutely. Yeah, the lack of information, I think, is something that doesn't get talked about enough. So that, I think, is a really good point for the stress that foreigners might feel and perhaps just not feeling like they have an avenue, a route to take, even if they do decide to go ahead and make that step.
It's worth noting as well that there is an anti-abortion movement in Germany. There are so-called March for Life demonstrations that take place annually in some cities. There was actually one in Munich last Sunday, which around 3,000 people were at, according to police. So let's hear now from Dr. Alicia Bayer. She is chairwoman of the Association Doctors for Choice Germany, which wants to see abortion decriminalized and regulated as a public health service. Alicia told me that the association welcomed the commission's.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Recommendations to the government, but added that they don't go far enough to remove barriers. I asked her what the effect of abortion being in the criminal code has on German society.
Well, at the moment, abortion regulation is placed in the criminal code next to murder and manslaughter. And that has a stigmatizing effect on people that are seeking abortions. And also it stigmatizes doctors that provide abortions because it's as if the state says that we do something forbidden. But in the end, abortions are a medical procedure that can save lives and that is should be part of the public health system.
It is a bit strange, Alicia, especially maybe for foreigners who are not so familiar with the German system, because it is tolerated and there are many cases in which you can get an abortion in Germany, but it's still in the criminal code. So why do you think it remains like this in Germany?
We had a lot of discussions about that regulation in the 70s and in the 90s. And then after reunification, we had the East that had a very liberal abortion law with abortions being legal in the first 3 months of pregnancy and covered by health insurance. And then we had the West Germany that had a rather restrictive abortion law. And then the compromise, the so-called compromise they found is the actual abortion regulation. But in the end, it was a bad compromise because the government back then wanted to go further and legalize abortions in the first 3 months. But then the Conservative Party went to the Constitutional Court. And then the Constitutional Court said that abortion has to be criminalized. But this decision is criticized today.
Do you think the government will take action then? Or you said you thought it might be delayed?
Yeah, I'm afraid it might be delayed again. Even if now the commission said it so clearly that it's possible to change the law, there are still politicians that are afraid that it might cause a controversion in society. But I think it's the opposite. We already have this controversial issue. We have protests against the abortion regulation for many years already. So I think now is the moment. We have a government that in general is open to change. And we have the commission that has just claimed how important it is to change the law.
Are associations and campaign groups like Doctors for Choice worried about the future when we're looking at other countries, for example, the United States, where we've seen a lot of developments regarding reproductive rights? Are you kind of worried about anything like that happening in Germany?
Well, the US shows us that there's always the possibility of a backlash. And also in Germany, we have fundamentalists or some parties also that want to make the abortion law even more restrictive. I'm afraid of that, but I also think this is a call for action like France did right now. They put the right to abortion into the constitution. So I think the step to now legalize abortion in Germany could also prevent a backlash. And we might have more right-wing governments in the future in Germany too.
Lastly, Alicia, what's it like for someone who's in Germany and is maybe looking to terminate an unwanted pregnancy? Is it a straightforward process, for example, to find information, to find a doctor and to go through with it?
No, it's not a straightforward process. We also just have the ELSA study, which is a big study project financed by the German Health Ministry that has done research for 3 years now, and they just have published their first results. And they, for example, found out it already starts when a person that is seeking an abortion tries to get information in the internet. That is already hard because many doctors don't provide information on their web pages because they are they fear stigmatization, and there's a lot of not neutral information in the internet. So it's hard already after finding out that you are pregnant to find good information. Then the next step is you have to get an appointment for the counseling, the obligatory counseling, even if we know that most people have taken their decision already. It's just a further appointment for them that takes time. So they have to do the counseling, then they have to wait 3 days, even if this waiting period is completely random and it doesn't help to that you change your decision. And sometimes, then you have practices that offer abortions only once a week. And then if you have this 3 days waiting period, it can cause that you can't get the appointment of this week. You have to wait for the next week. Then I had patients who then maybe had no one to care for their children, so they had to wait another week. So it's, sometimes this can cause the abortion to take place 2 to 3 weeks later than it could have actually been. Mm-hmm. And then the next problem is to find a doctor, because we also know from this ELSA study and also from our own experiences that in some regions in Germany, access is really bad and we don't have enough doctors who provide abortions. That means longer waiting times for patients to get an appointment and longer ways to get to the doctor, like more than 100 kilometers in some regions. If you can't pay for the abortion, you can require a cost absorption, but this also takes time. You have to send in all your income and so on and get it accepted. And this is also not fair. It should be covered by the health insurance.
Germans are known for their love of driving. So when Transport Minister Volker Wissing, of all people, threatened weekend driving bans in order to reach climate goals, it was a bit surprising, to say the least. And then a few days later, this tactic seemed to work because the German government agreed a reform of climate targets. Paul, first of all, what is this about a driving ban? Would that really have happened?
Yeah, last week, the transport minister warned that if the government didn't relax its climate protection rules before mid-July, he would be required to introduce strict measures for Germany's transportation sector to hit its emissions targets. He specifically named, quote, comprehensive and indefinite driving bans on Saturdays and Sundays, end quote, as an example of the kind of measures he might resort to. But there's little reason to believe that Wissing was serious about enacting driving bans, especially considering that he was constantly rejecting previous climate protection measures that could have reduced emissions in the transportation sector, such as introducing a speed limit on the Autobahn.
Yes, that's right. And he's, of course, from the Free Democrats, who are famously not really going crazy for environmental stuff.
They seem to be in favor of money over climate protections.
Yes.
Fast cars.
You could say.
Business, fast cars, that kind of vibe. So this was a push by Wissing essentially to get this draft law agreed, right? And to be honest, it's kind of genius. Did he get some backlash over this?
Yeah, he did. His threat was immediately met with criticism. The deputy leader of the Greens parliamentary group called Wissing's threat false and criticized him for stirring up controversy. A spokesperson for Greenpeace took its criticism even a step further, accusing the transport minister of shamelessly turning the possible consequences of his own failures into political pressure. But indeed, as you pointed out, this, as a political stunt, this was really a smart one. Or, yeah, it seems to have worked out for him in any case. Because climate protection reforms are now being discussed. And if these are enacted, it's likely going to spare him from needing to cut emissions in the transportation sector. And by the way, on the topic of driving bans, I think it's important to give a little historical context here. During the oil embargo of the late 1970s and early 80s, Germany actually implemented Sunday driving bans. So there was a severe oil shortage at the time. And basically making citizens drive less was really the only measure that the government could imagine to kind of rapidly cut oil demand. And that's what they did. And so West and then also East Germany, along with the Netherlands, Denmark, Switzerland, and France, all implemented these so-called car-free Sundays. And I think it's interesting to note that at that time, people really came together to do what needed to be done and even made the best of it. Like if you'd run a Google search for car-free Sundays 1970s, you can find these kind of wild photos of Germans like riding their bikes on the Autobahn, even having picnics, families just walking along where the cars usually roam, right? And now in 2024, even as we're facing the biggest ecological catastrophe in human history, a politician just mentions a driving ban and the media is like thrown into this world of controversy and everybody's just up in arms about this idea. So personally, I just see this as being a little bit ridiculous. And like, I don't know, I'd be curious to see a poll on the German public, how many people would be totally for or against a driving ban. I'm sure in Germany, maybe it's not a super popular idea, but I could also imagine among young progressive people living in urban city centers, maybe a driving ban actually would be popular.
So you want a driving ban, Paul?
I'm for driving bans. I say bring it on. I mean, I don't have a car, so.
I think as a cyclist, I wouldn't mind, but it's interesting. I mean, before we talk about driving bans, even the speed limit would be a start.
Oh, yeah. Sure.
Or even load to sort of restrict their
own. Don't tell Aaron. He loves that. He loves driving fast.
I won't. Luckily, he's not here right now. Hopefully, you won't listen to this one. Sorry, Aaron. But yeah, I just think, a little bit of some restrictions, definitely, as Paul said, wouldn't be the worst thing in the world.
That is one issue where I think a lot of polls have showed that it is somewhat popular, like maybe the majority of people agree with it. Mm. And yet every time it comes up, it's painted as such a controversy and such an infringement on freedoms. Mm.
Yes, I have heard that America has guns, Germany has cars. Imogen, can you tell us about this new draft law on climate protection then that's been agreed by the government?
Yeah, this all relates to the government's aims to cut harmful emissions by 65% between 1990 and 2030 and to become completely climate neutral by 2045. So under the current climate protection law, various sectors like housing, for example, waste disposal and industry are all given targets for cutting their emissions each year. And if they don't quite manage to hit these targets, if they're producing too many harmful emissions, the ministers in these sectors or responsible for these sectors are legally obliged to introduce what's known as a Sofortprogramm in German, basically an immediate program of emergency measures that will rapidly slash emissions in the sector. So most sectors actually in Germany are doing relatively well on this, or at least they're meeting their targets year on year. But housing and transport are two really problematic sectors that keep producing far too much CO2 and other harmful emissions year after year. So two environmental agencies actually ended up taking the government to court over this last year. And the administrative court in Berlin-Brandenburg mandated that the government introduce these emergency measures in these two sectors as soon as they could. So this law, the new climate protection reform, is in many ways an attempt to get out of this, though it was already drafted before the court decision was announced. But basically, under the upcoming rules, different sectors can actually pool their emissions budgets. So say transport produces 12 million tonnes more than it was supposed to. That's exactly what happened last year. It can offset that against, for example, the energy sector, who might have undershot their kind of budget of emissions for the year. But if sectors do keep producing too much CO2, too many emissions, there will still be emergency measures, but instead of this happening year for year, it will be two consecutive years will be the bar. So the bar is being raised here. And you might really wonder, okay, it's called a support program, but if you're waiting 2 years, then how urgent really are these measures? Mm-hmm. As you can imagine, climate groups are really not happy about this. And they've accused the government really of just taking the teeth out of their climate protection rules and just rendering them pretty much ineffective.
You know who is happy? Transport Minister Volker Wissing.
He's very happy, yeah. That was a savvy move, like you say.
Let's finish off today by listening to a section we recorded recently with guest Johnny Whitlam, who is a tour guide in Berlin. We have a lot of public holidays coming up in Germany and abroad in the next couple of months, so many people will be thinking about visiting Germany, and Berlin is often at the top of their lists even. Johnny, I would love to ask you, what are your top two or three spots that you would recommend tourists visit when they come to the German capital, maybe away from the usual places?
I've got three things that I hope people will really like. Number one, the Unveiled exhibition up at the Spandau Citadel. So like you get to visit a castle, which like I'm in there, that's always cool. but there's this exhibition in there of like what I call cursed statues. So they call it Unveiled. I'm like cursed statues. And so they've actually got some statues there that were, one of them was in like Hitler's garden, basically, in the middle of Berlin. Another one is a big statue of Lenin, used to be at Leninplatz in East Berlin, that's since been renamed. That's a really, really cool experience. Then there's the Cecilienhof Palace, which I don't feel is on everybody's radar. That's like, as an English person, you go there and you're like, oh, it definitely looks English. Good job. But that's where the Allies held the Potsdam Conference just after World War II. There's also a crack in beer garden next to it called the Meierei. You can't quite see it when you're there, but go over by the river and then, yeah, enjoy. And then my last one, way over on the other side of town, is the Mughalturm. So Berlin has a lot of lakes, nice lakes surrounding it, which I feel like you don't know when you actually visit and you just stay in the city center, but the countryside is really beautiful. Mughalturm is not quite the countryside, but you'll still get that feel. And it's by the side of Berlin's largest lake, and it's a nice walk out there. And yeah, who doesn't like looking at boats going up a tower, you know?
Love it, love it. Would you add anything, Imogen?
For sure. Well, I think that's a great list. And actually, I'm really glad you mentioned the Citadel, because that was almost on my list. I thought, yeah, the castle experience, not necessarily what you think of when you're going to Berlin, but it is a wonderful day out, definitely. So I've got maybe some slightly more grungy Berlin-y things. The two Soviet memorials would be my recommendation. Everyone knows the Treptow Park one, but I'm recommending this not only because it's just an incredible experience and an incredible place to go, but also because Treptow Park is a wonderful park. It's on the water, you can hire boats, so you can combine it with a beautiful walk along the river. Another walk that I like to do with people is taking them from a starting point. If you're really ambitious, Alexanderplatz, but otherwise somewhere along Karl Marx Alley, and you walk along this really old sort of ex-Soviet kind of ex-DDR kind of main street. And if you follow that along, you come to Frankfurter Tor. And then if you go south from there, you come to the East Side Gallery and you can cross the bridge to Kreuzberg. So that's a really cool part of Berlin. You can really soak up that atmosphere. And my last recommendation would be a cool drinking spot in Neukölln. I think you've got to have like a cool party drinking spot involved in any list that I'm creating, at least. So I would say Klunkerkranich in Neukölln. It's the top of a mall. Doesn't look like much from below, but once you're there, it's just a lovely sort of DIY space, a little sort of beer garden. And sometimes they have music, sometimes comedy. But the best part of it is that you have these panoramic views of Berlin.
Yeah, the view up there is crazy.
Beautiful.
I lived in Neukölln for 10 years and I'm going to do that. I remember when it was just like a car parking spot. And you could go up there and it was quite fun. It's much cooler now. It's much more fun now. But yeah, it was quite fun just walking up there when you kind of felt like you weren't supposed to. I don't own a car.
I think you still have to go through the car park to get there.
Yeah,
so
yeah, yeah.
A little bit of
yeah, you go to the fifth floor and walk up to the top. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, so, yeah. You do. And you have to pay by PayPal there, which I think is a little bit weird because I don't actually have a PayPal.
Interesting. I thought it was always cash previously. But
I swear it is PayPal. It really tricked me.
Were you really in Klunkerkranich? Did you get lost? Did you just meet a guy in the car park and give him your PayPal details?
I've never heard of a place like that in Berlin being so tech forward.
I'm telling you guys, go there and then come back and tell me if I'm right. Guys, what is one big tip tourists should know when they visit Berlin?
Don't expect the locals to be polite. Expect to be told off for asking for a beer. Bring cash or PayPal, as it turns out.
Those are great ones. The other one I would just say, I mean, I think we've kind of hinted at it with our recommendations, but it's not London. You don't just go to the centre and find everything. In fact, it's sort of the other way around. I often see people, these sad, sad lost tourists, wandering around Potsdamer Platz, wondering why there are no bars and no vibe and no atmosphere. And I say, you need to get on a train and go anywhere other than here. Potsdamer Platz is interesting in its own right, but go to the neighbourhood.
There are more interesting spots to be. You should be a guide. You're great.
Thank you. Well, but do I have to work Christmas Day?
No. I'm self-employed now.
Excellent. All right. Well, we'll do an interview afterwards.
So that's it for this week. Thank you so much to all our listeners. As always, we will add the links in the show notes for the stories we've been talking about today. This week's panelists have been Imogen Goodman and Paul Krantz. We also heard from Dr. Alicia Bayer from Doctors for Choice Germany. And our sound engineer is Rhys Edwards. I'm Rachel Loxton. We hope you enjoyed listening and we'll be back again next week. Until then, take care.